There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome. Today we are having a special guest. So we are having Alex Gotti with Philips Watches here at Stockholm for the first time, and we are very honored to be the only podcast invited for an interview.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me. It's really good to be in one of my favorite cities, Stockholm.
Ah, that's good to hear. You told me you've been here before, for profession or...?
For both. Ah. But I definitely find the city lovely. I love the cuisine. Ah. There's some great stores that you don't find anywhere else. So no, overall, it's a lovely place to be, and I'm always come back with great pleasure.
Oh, it makes me happy to hear. Yeah, it's my city, so I'm really proud of it. So it makes me really happy.
You're lucky to live here.
Thank you. Let's start from the beginning. I want to learn a little bit about you. You as a person, your background, and a little bit where you're from and so on.
So I'm originally Iranian.
Yes.
I spent my time between the U.S. and Paris, where I spent the largest number of my years. I'm a lawyer by education. Mm-hmm. I was working in London and Paris for a dozen years as a lawyer, as a finance lawyer. But I loved watches. I've been crazy about watches for as far as I remember. When I was 12, 13, the Swatch watch had come out. Yeah. And I remember in school, we used to trade them with your friends. You wanted what they had, they had what they wanted, what you had, and then we used to just trade them. And I think that's where my love of watches grew.
We did the same. We actually also swapped like part of the bracelet.
Exactly.
As well. Yeah. So
exactly.
You mixed them. Yeah.
It was like Legos.
Mm, exactly.
I'll tell you an interesting story. When I finished law school in Paris and I was looking for a job, and the law firm, the first one I worked for, it wasn't the biggest one, it wasn't the most famous one, it wasn't the one that paid the most. It was the one where the partner I was to work with had the nicest watches. Ah. The first interview I went, and I remember vividly, even today, he was wearing a Breguet Tourbillon.
Wow.
Then the next time I went for the interview, he had a Tank Cartier. Mm-hmm. And then the third time, he was wearing a Rolex Daytona. And I said, okay, this is it. I want to work with somebody who has all these great watches. Yeah. So that was my first choice of career. Yeah. Was once again just about watches. And then in 2001, with a friend of mine, we launched a forum, a watch discussion forum, mm-hmm. called The Purists, which today is called Purist Pro.
Ah.
It was before, you know, social media or anything. So it was an internet forum, yeah, where people could discuss. We started off with an Audemars Piguet forum. Then there was the Independence, then Vacheron, then Lange, etc. And little by little, I was still doing this as a hobby. Mm. I had my daytime job as a lawyer, but I was doing more and more consultancy for watch brands as to digital, as to client relationship. Don't forget that 20 years ago, brands, some of them didn't even have a website.
Right.
For them, internet was, you know, a dirty word. Mm. they didn't know what clients were. Their clients were always retailers. Mm. They didn't have their own boutiques. So sometime in end of 2007, 2008, Vacheron Constantin, whom I was very close to, called me up and asked if I would want to join them full-time and set up the whole social media, digital, and client relationship marketing.
Wow.
And it took me one full second to think about it. And I said, yes, 100 times yes. And it was the opportunity.
Where did you live by then? Did you live in London then?
I was living in Paris.
In Paris, okay.
Yeah. So I spoke to my wife. She says, yes, okay, let's go move to Geneva. Mm. So in end of 2008, I moved to Geneva, stayed with Vacheron for 7.5 years. And then joined Philips watch department in Geneva in early 2016, where I've been ever since.
Wow. But, okay, so if you go back, you said, were you born in Iran?
Yes.
And you lived in the United States, in London, in Paris, in Geneva. Where is home for you?
Well, you know, they always say home is where the heart is. And right now, home is definitely Geneva.
Yeah.
But I would say Paris has a special place in my heart, definitely.
Right.
I still have a lot of friends, a lot of memories. I try to go back as much as I can. For me, it really is one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
Yeah, Paris is beautiful, yeah. And do you see a difference in, if you compare the cities, and also if you go to New York or other places in the United States, if we look at the watches, is there different, what do you say, like fashion for watches or different, or is the watch collector the same all over the world?
The watch, no, I think you can no longer say one region has a specific type of collector. Mm. You can have people in the United States, in New York, let's say, which is the city where I go to the most often, you can have people who only collect Rolexes or only Breitlings or only independent watchmakers that nobody's ever heard of or Grand Seikos, etc. I think with time, the internet, the social media, the knowledge has grown and the tastes have been standardized. There's no longer a specific taste of what a Hong Kong collector will buy or what a Italian collector will buy or what a collector in Dubai will buy.
Right, right.
So it's that has evened out. There's no specific. But I have to say that living in Geneva, it's probably the city in the world where I've seen the nicest watches on people's wrists every day in the street. Not even out in collector gatherings. It's just walking in the street, you see some amazing watches.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, with all the watch industry there, maybe it's more normal or it's...
It's in people's consciousness, you know.
Exactly.
Well, when you travel to Geneva, when you arrive at the airport and you're walking to go through customs, basically the only advertisements you see are either watches or private banks.
Can I also ask you, what do you think? You said now that the internet has changed perhaps the behavior, but absolutely the knowledge of watches all over the world. And you started out with founding a forum, not one, but two or more forums, right?
I did one, and then I did one for just specifically dedicated to Vacheron Constantin, which was called the Hour Lounge, which doesn't exist anymore.
But do you think the time for forum has passed and moved on to, I don't know, Instagram? Or is forum always going to be there as a community for collectors? And
I think social media really had a blow on forums just because I think, and people's attention span has come down. You just want to look at a photo. And even where I remember years ago on forums, you had collectors who came and did long articles, why they bought a watch, what was their thought process, etc., or even detailing a specific piece. Today, it's mostly, look, what is my latest watch?
Mm.
I do think so, that forums, to become relevant again, will need to be more educational.
Mm.
Basically, a forum should be what blogs are today, like Houdinki or Monochrome or other great SJX, other great ones, just to name a few. But with that exchange and that discussion going, but I think it will come, because today social media is great just to see some photos, but you can't have a conversation. There's no search function. You can't really research anything, etc. I think there's a place for everything. We live a fantastic period where there's so much information. Mm. You just need to make sure that that information which is out there is correct, which is another thing to check. But I think forums, the way they are today, would need to definitely reinvent themselves.
But yeah, I agree. I think a lot of activity have moved to other platforms, but still there is a place also for forums in the future. So,
mm. Oh, and I hope so. I definitely would like to see the... I don't want to sound like the old guys thinking it was better before, but I would like to see more more content.
Mm. Yeah,
more original content than just look at the watch I bought. Mm. You have Instagram for that.
Yeah, exactly. You just scroll through the pictures.
Yeah.
Where did you go to learn about watches? Before, now you know everything, but before.
I don't know everything, not. Learning every day, which is fantastic. You know, if you know everything about something, then it just becomes boring. So.
Yeah.
When I was younger, it was just the very beginning of the internet. But I basically was magazines and watch books. Mm. So I read a lot of watch books at the time. The watch books were only written by Germans or by Italians.
Right.
So all the about brands, general collecting, etc. It was fantastic. So I think before I even started collecting watches, I started collecting watch books.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And this it's also like both watch books and old ads for watches are like a timestamp of the watches, how they were at that time and how they were used and so on.
How they were perceived, how the brand was talking about them. I think it's fascinating. Mm. I regret having thrown away basically all the magazines. I moved around so much and they were becoming so heavy. But it would be interesting to go back, if I had those, to read an article from 1995 about the so-and-so Patek, so-and-so Vacheron. It would be fascinating.
Mm. I agree, absolutely. Okay, let's talk a bit about your role here at Philips. First, you're head of the watch department here in, in Europe and in Middle East.
Exactly.
Yeah. What does it mean?
So, I mean, the head of the watches, we have three different heads. One, Europe, Middle East, which is myself, my colleague Paul Boutros for the Americas, and my colleague Thomas Parazzi for Asia. Our role is to, with the teams obviously, to source the watches, to vet them, to examine them, to prepare the auction. So I'm responsible for the auctions in Geneva. Mm-hmm. To organize the marketing, the social media, the press, the sales, the post sales, and just, you know, general HR matters with the teams. It could be, you know, finding a new space, organizing an exhibition somewhere. So it's very, very large.
Yeah.
It's very,
it sounds
very
like
large.
A fun job. It's not, you don't do the same thing twice in a row. Yeah.
No. It's a fantastic job. I have to admit that I have never worked this much in my life, even when I was a lawyer. Mm. But I don't feel I'm working. I'm having fun and I'm basically getting paid to do what I would have done for free anyway. I travel and meet collectors and look at watches. Yeah. What else is there not to love? What is there not to love?
You're living the dream, right?
Exactly.
That's great. I mean, that is the trick, I think. If you feel like playing when you're working, no one can beat you.
No.
It's the best. It's the best situation.
And I think one of the strengths at Philips Watches is that our teams... Everybody is a watch nut. Yeah. Everybody is crazy about watches. Not all of us are crazy about the same watches, which is good. Mm-hmm. So we have diversity. But truly, it is a team of watch nerds.
Oh, that's great. Tell me a little bit about your taste, or what is your most? When I try to read a little bit about you, it looks like you were very much into independent.
Yes.
Yes. Is there anything else that is like what you're really looking into?
My general taste and points of interest is really watchmaking, and it could be clocks, it could be a pocket watch, it could be a wristwatch, it could be a 50 franc watch, or it could be a 5 million franc watch. It really is all about the history and the mechanics. That's what I love. I love watchmaking. That's why when we get into these, sometimes collectors start saying, oh yes, you know, the dial, the brand is tilted here, it has a draught there. Like, that's not watchmaking. That's just the dials. It's great, it's aesthetics, but that's not watchmaking to me. Watchmaking for me is the movement, it's the history, it's the mechanics. But as I think, as far as I can go back, I've always been attracted to two types of watchmaking. One is vintage and one is independent watchmakers. And I think they both overlap. They both are about craftsmanship, about telling a story, about speaking about history, about rarity.
This is interesting. I'm a vintage person. I like that very much. I look at independent. I haven't really come that far yet, but it fascinates me when you say that they're overlapping, or they're sort of speaking to the same triggers.
But because, you know, if you want to buy a vintage watch, you need to do a lot of research. If you want to buy an independent watchmaker, you need to do a lot of research. You can't just walk into a boutique and say, hi, I want a Christian Klings, or I want a Kari Voutilainen, or I want a George Daniels. That doesn't exist.
No.
So you have to go see the Kari Voutilainen or the Christian Klings, but a lot of people, or half, nine-tenths of watch collectors, haven't even heard of these guys. So you need to do a lot of research first and be sure of your taste to do it. That's why I think there is this overlap. But that doesn't mean I don't respect or enjoy modern mainstream. I do, because I think there's a lot of great things coming out. We were recently exhibiting at the Geneva Watch Days last week, and I went and saw some of the new watches coming out. I mean, there's so much creativity, so much amazing things coming out, that it's a great time to be alive if you love watches, because there's so much going on and you're getting so many different things from different types of brands or makers. It's amazing, but my personal taste in general is I'm more attracted to vintage and independent.
And if you should pick some brands, if you take some independent brands that really speaks to you, which ones would you say?
Well, there are very different types of brands. I think there's, for example, there's De Bethune, which for me is the most incredible brand in the world. Denis Flageolet, their watchmaker, he is creating 21st century watchmaking. I think if Breguet was alive, he would be doing what Flageolet is doing, which is always innovating, taking it one step further. And maybe you like the designs, maybe you don't like the designs, and it could be very controversial because they're very bold, even the technicalities of the movement. But it's phenomenal. I love MB&F. I love Uhrwerk. I think Kari Voutilainen, in terms of classical watchmaking, is doing something superb. One of the new watchmakers, which I discovered during Watches and Wonders Fair in Geneva, is a guy called Sylvain Pinault. He's a Frenchman. He won this prize a few years ago in France for the best craftsman in watchmaking, with a chronograph that he had done all by hand. And he has a new watch out, which has been selected for the Geneva Grand Prix. And I was very much impressed by what he did. So it's incredible, because you can have 10 or 20 or 30 of these independent artisans in front of you, and they're all different. They could be classical, they could be avant-garde, but even if they're classical, they're very different from each other, because they reflect the personality and the soul of the person who's making them.
That's great. And the same question when it comes to vintage. Which one would you pick out from all the nice vintage you've seen?
So I'm not, for example, I'm not a big Rolex guy.
No.
But I have to admit that that the Rolex Daytona, the manual wine models, are probably the most beautiful and well-balanced chronograph, vintage chronographs that exist. I don't think anybody has done anything better ever since or then. Mm. It says a lot. I mean, it's almost 60 years old. I have a very soft spot for Vacheron Constantin vintage.
Right.
And obviously Patek. I mean, what is there not to love with their incredible perpetual calendars, the perpetual calendar chronographs? Mm. It's superb. There's such elegance and sophistication in the watches. Yeah, so I'm a lucky man because all these watches that I dream of, I see them every day at the office. Yeah,
yeah. Do you? Could it be the bad thing that you see too much so that you still love them?
Because everything is different. You can have a Patek Philippe 2499 in front of you, a pink gold, a yellow gold, whatever, and then next season, you could have another one, but it's different because it has had a different story to it. Mm. It has been living on somebody else's wrist. The dial may be a bit different. The dial may have even aged a bit differently. So, no, it's fantastic. The day I become blasé is, I think, the day I'm dead.
Mm. Yeah, true. But this part with the story of a specific watch, this really fascinates me. I think perhaps more than the watch.
Yes.
I don't know why, but there's something, if you have like an engravement in the back or if you have the papers from when it was bought, when you can sort of track it over time, and you don't need to know, but you can sort of dream of what it has
exactly
experienced.
This is, I mean, we are Indiana Joneses.
Exactly.
You have to dig in, try to find out why this happened. Mm. Why is this, you know, because today in the watch industry, there are rules. A watch with this reference has to come with this type of dial, this kind of bracelet. Mm. But even 30 years ago, people didn't think like that.
Yeah.
So you swap things. You took a bit of here, you took a dial here, a case there, and then made a watch. And you have to try to figure out why, what happened, what was the thought process, what was the seller trying to do, what was the buyer trying to do. So it's fascinating. That's why there are stories, and you have to kind of dig in and try to figure out what's going on, what went on. So no, it's magnificent.
All right. I didn't prepare you for this question, but if you have something on top of your mind, some interesting story about a specific watch that you have been discovering for an auction or been presented somehow during your old career.
I have a funny story.
Please.
When I was running the Vacheron Constantin Forum, this is, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, called the Hour Lounge. One day, I have a post. I wake up in the morning, I see a post with a photo saying, the title was said, what can you say about this watch? Is it real? Normally, when we had these types of questions, the watch was always fake. The guy knew who was fake, but was hoping that it looked real enough. Mm. So I opened the post without much conviction, and there I see a color photo of a watch that I had only seen a black and white photo in a Vacheron Constantin book from the 1990s. Mm. It's a watch we had only heard of, and never seen. It was a tonneau-shaped retrograde calendar, a minute repeater. And like, oh my God. And so I explained to the guy that this watch was very important. It's a unique piece. There was no information about it published. There's only one black and white photo, and that's it. And then all the other, you know, participants went, oh my God, great watch, etc. And I think he got kind of scared, and he disappeared.
Oh.
When I joined Philips a few years later, I remembered this watch. Like, okay, you know what? I would love to bring that watch to the market. But the forum had disappeared, and I did not remember the guy's name. I just remembered his first name. I took my iPhone, and you know, iPhone, when you send an email, it automatically keeps the email. And I went through, I think, 6,000 email names I have on my phone, and one of them looked as if it could be that person. I sent him an email, no news. Okay. A year later, on LinkedIn, I get an email, a message from this guy saying, oh, Alex, thank you so much for reaching out. good thing. I read your message. It was on my, I don't know, Yahoo account, which I was not using anymore. And I was actually cleaning it up and just stumbled on your, let's discuss. Yes.
You start to get like a pulse, right?
Yeah. So the gentleman was in Spain. I fly to Spain to see the watch. And it was, I mean, frankly, when I said this is a Indiana Jones moment, it wasn't.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Having, it was like holding the Holy Grail in my arms. Imagine a watch that I had dreamt of since I was 20 and I had only seen a black and white photo. And I was probably the third or fourth person to touch that watch ever since it had left Vacheron. And so we discussed the watch had belonged to his great granduncle who had... had bought it. He was had worn it. He had businesses in Peru, I believe. Yes, it was in Peru. The watch was a bit in bad condition. I called up Vacheron. We spoke about it. They said, okay, we're going to restore the watch completely. It took them a year.
Wow.
And meanwhile, we did a lot of research and everything matched. The watch was commissioned in Spain by this person, by the grandfather, by the granduncle of this person. Whose name was, I think, Francisco. So that's why we nicknamed the watch the Don Pancho. And I mean, it was incredible. And finally, after almost 25 years after my having seen a black and white photo of it for the first time, and 3 years after having started chasing for it, it came to the market. Mm. And I have to admit that I was very sad to see it go.
Yeah, of course.
And I was hoping the Vacheron Museum would buy it, so it would be available for to see, but it went to a private.
Yeah, okay. So now it can go another 50 years before it comes to the market.
Exactly, exactly.
Wow, what a story.
It was incredible. It's a very personal story.
Of course, yeah. Oh, I love these stories, and I love the passion in it, and it's so much. And sometimes I see people who find this barn find, whatever they call, and they try to trick the owners. Mm-hmm. If it's an old person that don't know the value of the watch and so on. And that makes me so sad. But when it comes to an auction house, you have no reason to trick anyone. Your reason is, I mean, it's opposite. The better
the higher price. The price, yes. For, yes. No, and you know, you should never, and we have had, you know, these barn finds where people come up to us and say, I don't know what this is, and it's an incredible watch. Mm. It's well, first of all, as an auction house, you're the agent of the seller.
Yes.
So you can't really, I mean, do anything other than try to sell it. But it's also not right. Those who do it, it's just bad karma.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. I agree. Can you describe how is a normal... process of if you find the watch or how is the watch just presented to you before an auction
so there are different ways of getting watches. There's watches that are with collectors that we know and we can contact them and tell them that we would want to have the watch. But normally I don't do that because somebody who's not ready to sell a watch will never be happy with the result. So that we don't do. But mostly the watches come from people who we know who have decided to move on their collection. They want to upgrade, they want to change, they want to buy something else. There's people who we don't know but who've heard of us, who contact us. There's word of mouth, happy clients, happy sellers, friends. I mean, I've even had watches come to us through parents of the friends of my kids.
Mm.
Who's like, oh, yeah. You know, I have a kid in my school, my friend, his dad works in watches, etc. So basically the watches come from all different angles.
Is it then important for you to have these pieces that are really special and that will break records? And, I mean, to get the
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think Philips watches, there's three really pivotal moments in our history, which is a very young history because the watch department was launched in 2015.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's very new. So I think the first pivotal moment was in 2016 where we sold Patek Philippe 1518 in stainless steel, mm-hmm. only one of four known. And it was the first time a wristwatch was sold above 10 million Swiss francs, sold for 11. Then a year later, in 2017, we sold Paul Newman Daytona for 17.5 million. When you start selling things like that at those prices, you get a lot of attention and then you get a lot of collectors coming to you.
Yes.
And then last year in November 2021, we just had the highest average, let's say the greatest sale total with 71 million Swiss francs. Which was the highest sale total for any watch auction. The previous record was 40 million. And that's when we had, you know, the first Jaune subscription set, all number ones. We had all of the Philippe Dufour watches. And the more you have watches like that on the market and the better prices you have, well, obviously, it's a virtuous circle. The more clients come to you. We try, at least in Geneva, We select between 220 to 250 watches every sale, but we see over 2,000 watches.
Yeah, okay. Can it also be, that's a photographer, but he can wait.
Yeah.
Can it also be important, I mean, take the Paul Newman, that you have like a famous person outside the watch community that will draw attention from non-watch collectors, that the watch can be first very valuable, mm-hmm. but also that it's possible to sell it on an auction with an auction house like Philips and so on. Is that, I mean, you expand your circle of possible sellers.
Well, to give you an example, after the Paul Newman sale, the daughter of Marlon Brando reached out to us for her father's watch.
Mm.
So definitely, I think today, and thanks to these sales, watch collecting and watches, there has been a tipping point. Watches are no longer just, you know, something to be worn on the wrist and to give you time and reserved just for a bunch of, you know, the happy geeks who collector groups. It's considered as a work of art, and very rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
When you say that, you know, somebody sat there and crafted these mechanical masterpieces with their hands and that are ticking 50, 60, 100, 200 years later, that is art, making something like that. And then when you think of it, and this, I love saying it, and the more I say it, the more I think that watches are genius, is it's the most sustainable object today in the world. It needs only your energy to function.
Mm.
It has been made to last. You don't have to throw it away. You can use it every day, 24/7. All you need to do is, after 5 years, give it to your watchmaker who will put a bit of oil in it, and then you continue wearing it. And then when you stop wearing it, you can give it to your kids, you can give it to your friends, and it can go on for 200 years if it's taken care of. What more sustainable do you want?
Mm, exactly. I agree, 100%. No pollution or nothing. So,
nothing.
Yeah,
nothing.
Fantastic. Yeah, I agree. I want to ask you a little bit for the next question here. Now Philips is visiting Stockholm.
Yes.
And you are showing some fantastic watches. We're going to talk a little bit about them as well. What is the reason for coming to Stockholm, and what is the reason for coming to Stockholm right now?
Well, the reason for Stockholm is, well, you know, Stockholm is a hub in terms of art, fashion, design. And I was saying watches are art, fashion, and design. So you have to be where the action is. So that's why we're here. And why right now? Well, because we have we're starting the tour. We're kicking off the tour of our watches for the Geneva sale in November. And every year, the watches are taken on tour to Hong Kong, to Singapore, to New York, to London, to Geneva, to Dubai. And this year, we decided to also kick off the tour here in Stockholm and bring it to the collectors and the watch enthusiasts here, so they can see them, because some of the watches are so unique and so rare that once they're gone, they're gone. So this is a unique opportunity to see some of the pieces, including the triptych of George Daniel's wristwatches that we brought with us.
Tell me about that. Tell the full story, because this is interesting.
So George Daniel's, you know, but I'll tell it for your auditors, is most probably or most certainly the very first independent watchmaker. He's the first one who put his name on a dial. Before, watchmakers worked for a brand, but their name wasn't somewhere else. Sure, in the 1900s or 1800s, you had the Audemars was an independent watchmaker because he existed. Vacheron was an independent watchmaker because he was living. But then when all these became brands, you didn't have a sole, unique, lone watchmaker creating pieces. And George Daniels in 68, he was the first to actually decide and create his own his own watch. It was a pocket watch with his name on the dial. And, I mean, he inspired the likes of François Puljon today, who's probably the best known independent watchmaker, to become a watchmaker and to continue developing this his oeuvre. So we have the immense pleasure of having one of the only two wristwatches that Daniels made 100% by himself. The other wristwatches he has that bear his name were made with conjunction with Roger Smith, his protege and apprentice. So this is a double-sided springcase tourbillon that he made for himself. He never was intended to sell it. He wore it for almost 10 years on his watch, on his wrist, until a collector, not even a collector, because I spoke to him, he had seen a TV show on George Daniels and was fascinated and went to see him and said, please sell me your watch. And Daniels said, there's no way, this is my personal watch, get out of my house. And he kept coming back, and he kept coming back, and then they became friends. And it's only 12 years later that Daniels finally agreed to sell the watch to the collector. So it's his personal watch. So this watch has been in private collections ever since it was made in 1992, and it's the very first time it's coming to the auction market or to market. So it's one of the very rare times that it can actually be admired and seen.
Okay, can I ask you, what is your guess or your estimation of?
So our estimate, we just said in excess of 1 million Swiss francs, because we believe. What do I think it will make? I don't know, and I'm a superstitious man, and I don't want to say anything. So we'll see on November the 5th.
November the 5th. Yeah, this is going to be so interesting to follow.
It's going to be very interesting.
Do you? I don't know. For me personally, I very often I log on to these big auctions, like on November the 5th, and it's like a big show to me to have a look at the both the nice pieces and everything, but also the auction in itself is like a big show.
It has to be a show. You know, auctions started 250 years ago to sell off all the objects and jewelries and furniture of the aristocracy. That's how it started off. And so basically, I like to say, you know, auctions, we use 18th century techniques to sell 18th century technology, which are watches. So it needs to be fun. Mm. It needs to be a show. It needs to create excitement. Because, you know, let's be honest, you don't need watches, you don't need auctions. But today, you need to have the show. But the show is just a frame for having fantastic watches.
Yes.
If you don't have fantastic watches, you just have an empty show. Mm. But it's great to have a great show and great watches. Mm. And the reason why I think we're still relevant today, why I was even joking, you know, 18th century marketing, is that I would say 99% of the watches that we do bring to the market, you can't find them anywhere else.
Right.
So there's been a lot of search and excitement and eagerness to go find these really rare, super quality, modern or vintage timepieces and bring them to the market. So yes, it's a whole show. And I was speaking to somebody earlier on, a journalist, saying I'm on different WhatsApp groups, collector WhatsApp groups, and during the sale, they watch it live, and they're rooting for one person or another, saying, "Oh, I hope he wins the watch or she wins the watch." So it becomes almost like a tennis tournament where they're wishing sharing that so and so will win the watch. So it's so it's interesting. So it's
tell me about the process. You have Aurel Bax as the main character in the auction house. He's doing a fantastic job.
Well,
of course.
Aurel, he's basically the head of worldwide watches.
Okay.
First of all, yeah.
But then you have the whole crew supporting him and supporting the whole auction. Tell me, because when I watched it, the broadcast, it's you see the telephone calls coming in. Tell me a little bit about that, because I never really figured out the whole process.
So first, we don't have only Aurel, who's a fantastic auctioneer, but we have a new generation of auctioneers who are stepping up and who are doing a fantastic job and who really can identify with different types of the population. I mean, you know, we have Tiffany Toh, who loves watches. She's very straightforward. There's Clara Cassie, who has a certain elegance in her auctioneering. There's Marcello DeMarco, who has a man bun, long hair, big beard. He looks like a hipster, but he knows his watches.
Sharp,
and then obviously Aurel Bax. So we have, I think, and this is the interest of following a Philips auction, is it's not always the same guy doing it. It's different, let's say, actors coming in. And then there's different ways to bid. You can either bid online, you can bid in the room, or on the phone. And on the phone, it's almost like being in the room, but anonymously, or if you're far away, because basically you discuss with a specialist on where you should go, who you're up against. Sometimes I'm on the phone with one of my clients. I'm like, listen, you're up against a guy who is ready to pay five times what the watch is worth. Forget it. You're not going to get it.
So in that case, you represent the buyer.
There you represent the buyer. Well, our goal is for the seller to get the highest price because they trust us and bring us something, and you know we have to deliver. But also, we don't want our clients to pay ridiculous prices for something. And, you know, it's our job also to advise them. You know, yes, please, I think this is worth it because there's not a better one. It's so rare. Or, you know, it's okay. Don't go this high. There will be others. So we have a role to advise. You know, we're not just... I think before, most and foremost, we're advisors before being salesmen. And I think that's why we have such great clients, because they trust us and they know that when we tell them something, you know, that we're not, our goal isn't just to make money off their back.
I mean, you build trust, and of course, then the buyers will come back and the sellers will come back.
Exactly.
So you stand for the trust.
Trust is the most important thing. Your trust is something that takes years to build and 5 minutes to destroy.
That is so true.
And once it's gone, it's finished.
Yeah. Happens after the auction? Do you that is working with auction? Do you just sit down, or do you go out celebrate, or what is?
So, our auctions are on 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So the Saturday evening, we basically just go home and relax because the next day we're starting again. And an auction, an auction is not just those 2 days of auction, it's the 6 months before.
Right.
It's almost a marathon that you run at the speed of a sprint.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. It is exhausting. But on the Sunday night, when everything's over, we definitely go out and party, have great wine, have good food, celebrate with the teams, with the clients. And the next day, and I've noticed, we've spoken to a lot of colleagues, we have what we call the post-auction blues.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Like, you know, it's like when you have a great party and it's over, you're like, okay, so that was great, you know, you're happy. But very rapidly, while you have the post-auction, you're sending out the invoices, making sure the watches are going to the clients. And 2 weeks after that, you're either in Hong Kong or New York because you're supporting your colleagues for their sales, or already preparing your next. So that you, there's never a moment where you can actually relax.
But I understand. It's also like if you have this month of preparation and you push as much spotlights on these watches as possible, and then you have the grand finale with the auction, and then you have to. The energy must go
exactly.
out.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, it's you're sad to see some watches go because you've grown fond of them because they're so rare, they're so amazing, that you're happy to see them every day at the office or do the photography or do the marketing or present them to collectors, etc. And then when they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah. Oh, this is interesting. Does it make you happy or sad if they come back, the watches? I mean, if they end up with not an owner that don't want to keep it, or are you happy to bring them back again?
Well, it's never good for a watch to come back, especially an important watch. I mean, you can have a generic commercial watch. Owner buys it. He's like, okay, you know what? I don't like it, or I want to sell it because I want to buy something else. Okay. But if it's a very important watch, they rarely tend to come back soon. Because it's also not good for the watch itself.
Exactly. Interesting. Before we end up, I would like to ask you, when you build your collection, or what would your advice be to someone who wants to start to build a collection, or actually have a collection, want to develop it? If you should like give me five advice or something that is important.
I think building a collection, first of all, is... And this is the number one rule, is buy what you like, buy what speaks to you, buy what puts a smile on your face. Don't buy something to impress other people. Don't buy something that everybody else has and you want it just to say, I have one too. Don't go down that route, because the watches, your collection, is a reflection of your personality. And your personality, well, it's you. It's not somebody else. So always remember that it's, you're doing it for yourself. Second is... do your homework. Do a lot of research before. Unless it's a modern watch and there's no risk, you just need to go into a shop, buy the watch, or put your name down on a waiting list, okay. But if you're buying vintage, if you're buying an independent, make sure you do your homework first. Always buy from a reputable source, may it be a shop, an auction house. Don't buy something on the internet just because it's cheap, because you know a good deal doesn't exist. Always buy the best you can afford in your budget. It's better to spend 5,000 euros on an Omega that's worth 3,000 because it's the best condition you have, rather than spend 20,000 on a beaten up, destroyed Daytona that is normally worth 50,000 or 60,000, and here it's 20,000. But if it's low, because there's a good reason that it's low. So I think that's definitely something to go by. And for those who are starting collecting, is don't forget that your tastes will change.
I agree.
Don't think that, yeah. So sometimes it's good to start on a very low budget rather than start spending a lot, because your tastes will definitely change. And one thing is, don't ever think that the watch you're buying, which is the watch of your dreams, is the last one. Everybody says, oh, this is my last watch. It's my dream watch. Never again. Believe me, 2 months later, you'll already be hunting for your next dream watch.
That is also true. It's like a disease. You're
it
never
is.
Done.
Yeah. It's always the next one.
In a
one.
Good way. So
it's a super disease. Exactly.
This was great. Great advice. And how many watches do you think you should have in a collection? This is a really stupid question, but...
I really don't know. Well, I would think a one watch collection, is that a collection? But at least two.
Yeah, start from two and up.
I don't know. Yeah. I seriously don't know. I think it's how you feel comfortable, what your wallet says, what your heart says, what your family says. Yeah, it's whatever makes you happy. There's no really rule in there. I mean, everybody's in this. Whatever you collect. I mean, you could be collecting pens, watches, arts, paintings, or whatever. It's all for the pleasure. And whatever gives you pleasure, if one object gives you pleasure, great. If 100 watches give you pleasure, then be it.
That's the right number. Whatever gives you. Yeah, I agree. Thank you so much. This has been really, really nice. I'm so happy to meet you, Alex.
Thank you. My pleasure. And thank you once again. I was delighted to be part of the show. And thank you for your interest.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.